Well, I just want to grab everyone's attention. I know a lot of you in the room. I'm Jerry Gillum, Judge Executive here in Christian County. It's certainly an honor for me to be here today. Oftentimes, political folks don't get involved in primary endorsements, but this one was an easy one for me. I was proud to endorse Congressman Barr for U.S. Senate, and because he's proven himself in a very quick time to be a leader and certainly going to be a great asset for the Commonwealth and certainly a great asset for agriculture. So, Congressman, welcome to Hawkinsville. Glad to have you.
Great to be back.
Yes,
thank you, Judge. Judge, thank you very much for that endorsement. It means a lot to me. You're so well respected to do a great job leading the county here, and it's great to be in the heart of agriculture country in West Kentucky. And we have farmers and agribusiness owners from all over the Commonwealth who are here. I want to thank especially Adam Hinton, who has agreed to serve as the co-chair of this Farm Advisory Council for the Barr for Senate campaign. And of course, Mr. Wayne Hunt. Mr. Hunt, thank you for hosting us here at this wonderful business. Thank you for all that you've contributed to the ag economy in the Commonwealth over the years. It's great to be with you and your family. Brandon, good to see you. Thank you very much. And thanks for all of you all for putting your name on this advisory council, which is not just about politics or the Senate campaign. My vision for this group is have a permanency to it. This is really not just about getting elected. It's about serving the farmers and agriculture in Kentucky on a long-term basis. We are losing influence in Washington, D.C. We've had a senator who has served and recognized the importance of agriculture for 42 years. And for the first time now, Kentuckians have an opportunity to elect a new senator. It's really important that that senator be able to hit the ground running with experience, having worked for the farm communities of central Kentucky, like I have over the last 13, 14 years, be able to hit the ground running and immediately pick up the mantle and start working for our farmers. There is no more important signature industry of the Commonwealth of Kentucky than agriculture. And our agricultural economy in Kentucky is diverse. There's forestry in the east. There's a lot of beef cattle in central Kentucky. We have, we still have the remnants, I would say, of a burley economy, a tobacco economy. We still grow some tobacco, but that we've been looking for alternatives there. That's why we're interested in hemp, Mr. Furnish. By the way, thank you for coming over from Harrison County. That's a long drive. And just like Fleming County, not too much further, but also far. So we're looking at alternatives like hemp and how we can provide a future and a roadmap for industrial hemp. Obviously, beef cattle has been a big growing option for our farmers. And a lot of those burley tobacco growers in my part of the state have moved on to feeder cattle and cow-calf operations. So we're really focused on that economy and making sure that that has a real vibrant future. And then beans and corn and row crops and all kinds of other produce and commodities over here in West Kentucky and around the state. So we've got diversity, and our task is to make sure that we deal with the challenges that face our farmers and open up new markets. And those could be domestic markets and fuel and E15.
That'd be good.
It could also be opening up export markets. So we've hit the ground running with President Trump in terms of trying to advance the agriculture economy in the country. So with the reconciliation bill, with the One Big Beautiful Bill, there's a lot of tax policy in there, but there's also a down payment on the farm bill. So just to give you a quick thumbnail sketch of what was in that bill that we passed that was signed into law on July 4th. 98% of all farms are pass-through entities. So we made permanent and increased the pass-through tax deduction for LLCs and S corporations. Again, most of our agricultural businesses are those. So that was very important. Bonus depreciation, expensing of new capital equipment. That's a big thing for a business like this. You're selling tractors and equipment. That pulls forward a lot of that investment. So that's a big deal. We had a version, not the complete version that I co-sponsored, but a version of the ACRE Act. The ACRE Act is designed to lower the cost of credit. Ag credit, farm credit, that's a very important source of capital for our farmers. But 80%, 90% of all ag loans in this country from banks come from community banks. And so what we said in the ACRE Act is if you're a community bank in rural America, the interest you earn on a loan secured by real estate and agricultural property land, that can be exempt from tax. The interest that the lender earns on that is exempt from tax. The version that we were able to include in the Working Families Tax Cut Bill, or the One Big Beautiful Bill, was 25% tax exemption. Why is that important? That allows community banks to originate more ag loans. So again, more competition, reducing the cost of credit. We still have interest rates that are too high, but that was very, very important. There was an important provision that I know Senator McConnell worked on that with the Kentucky Farm Bureau that was included in that. That was a new capital gains tax deduction designed to keep farmland in the hand of next generation farmers. And then, of course, the death tax. We permanently increased the death tax exemption to $30 million for married couples and indexed it for inflation. That will protect an estimated 2 million family-owned farms from being split up or sold just to pay the tax bill. So these are all tax provisions that were very, very important for the ag economy in the One Big Beautiful Bill. The ag title of that bill also, like I said, was a down payment on the farm bill, $56 billion for Title I programs like agriculture risk coverage and market assistance loans, $6 billion for crop insurance, doubled funding for market access and foreign market development program to grow exports. And for the first time ever, for the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture and some of our other ag research facilities and our land grant universities, a mandatory funding for those research facilities to ensure that here in Kentucky and other land grants remain the global leaders in innovation in agriculture. So I think that was a good start. Now, we haven't done everything we need to do, and that's why my good friend G.T. Thompson, the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, is going to start marking up Farm Bill 2.0 tomorrow. That is in the Ag Committee tomorrow. So we are moving forward, notwithstanding everything that's going on in the world right now. I'll be back in Washington, D.C., tomorrow. My wheels are down at 4 p.m. and at 5 p.m. I'm going to be in the SCIF with Secretary Hegseth, with Secretary Rubio, with the CIA director, and with the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to get an update on what's going on in the Middle East right now. But GT is going to move right ahead with marking up that bill. So that's really, really important. You know, we work with the Kentucky Farm Bureau in a lot of ways, including insurance. And everybody talks about affordability. You know, in some ways, affordability can cut two ways. And our commodity prices, our row crop prices have seen kind of depression level price levels. And so what's the solution to that? The solution to that is markets. E15, which we've worked with this group on promoting E15, which, by the way, it's estimated would result in an additional demand for an additional 2 billion bushels of corn in this country. Maybe I've seen a statistic of 2.4. That's a big additional marketplace. We got to work with our petroleum marketers and our refineries. We got to work through all that. And there are objections, and including Republicans. We've got to work through those objections and figure out a way forward. And we might need Democrats to help us with E15. We failed in the appropriations process to get that in there. But really what it comes down to is more markets for our farmers and also decreasing our dependence on foreign sources of energy. That's a national security issue. That's a big deal. Diversification of our fuel sources, that's a really important thing. So it's about jobs at home, national security, decreasing foreign dependence. It is energy dominance. It's what the president talks about, energy dominance. And our farmers can play an important part in that. Also, we want to be energy dominant because that's part of your fuel inputs. That's part of your cost structure. More production, supply. That's what lowers the cost of everything. And if we can produce more energy in this country, that means your fuel inputs will be lower. And that's important for margins. But in terms of the lower commodity prices and how do we make farming profitable so that the taxpayer doesn't have to continue to write checks, and we obviously need an emergency response to all of this that we've seen because of a lot of things, but you know, trade comes into that as well. We need markets, and so I'll transition to trade. China is an unreliable partner. China has been an important market for American farmers, especially for beans and corn. But we have learned the hard way, we can no longer depend on China to be a reliable trading partner. We just can't. If we can do as much as we can with leverage that this president has tried to create with China to sell more into China, great. If they buy it, great. But we can't depend on it. So when I've talked to my friend, Howard Lutnick, I've gotten to be personal friends with the Commerce Secretary. I knew him before he became Commerce Secretary because he was such an important participant in financial services at Cantor Fitzgerald, and I serve on the Financial Services Committee, but I really got to know him, obviously, in this new role. So he's kind of leading the effort on trade. And, you know, what he has communicated to me and what I know what the president wants to do with this trade policy, which admittedly in the short term does create some uncertainty. What he's trying to do is give himself some leverage to open up markets that didn't exist to us before, to diversify our export marketplace beyond China. Australia, the ASEAN countries, Southeast Asia, that's a huge market. And India is the mother lode, if you will, of export markets, if we can deal with their protectionism. There is an announcement, thanks to the trade policies of this administration, that we're going to get a better, more reciprocal deal with India. That's 1.4 billion people. There's a lot of mouths to feed over there. It's not just China that's a big market. India is a huge market. And my hope for you all is to continue to work with this administration in the Senate to open up those markets, including India. India is notoriously protectionist. They put up tariffs, huge tariffs, keeping our exports out of that country. My hope is that we can continue to make progress in opening up that market and other markets for American exporters. So E15 is part of the solution, but just market access to those very populous countries is very, very important. Bottom line here is, you know, it's been a blessing that American farmers are so productive. That's a blessing. We're the best farmers in the world. We've got the most fertile land in the world. We have the best techniques. I was just with Cecil Farms in Owensboro in Davis County. I was looking at all the great things they do on beans, corn, watermelon, vegetables. But I was also with livestock with the O'Brien Farms. And it's amazing the efficiency gains in for the pork producers over the years. But we need to open up those markets. It's a blessing that we're so productive, but it's a curse as well because we've produced so much that really reduces prices. So we need more markets. I'll just conclude by saying, you know, we work with Farm Bureau on insurance issues. We work with our farmers all over, our cattle producers too. There's a lot of things I've been working on with our Central Kentucky cattle producers. I talked about hemp and trying to figure out a way to create a regulatory framework, Brian, that would give that industry kind of longevity and legitimacy and protect our kids at the same time. So we got a lot of work to do. But long story short, those are just quick fire thoughts on my brain as I come in here and talk to all these farmers today. But I want you all to know, number one, thank you for your interest in my candidacy. Number two, I don't want this just to be a political announcement of a coalition of farmers who support my candidacy. What this is about is the precursor of a long-term commitment that I'm making to you all, that this advisory council will live beyond the election. What this is about is a permanent dialogue between the agricultural producers of this Commonwealth and my office. And if the people of Kentucky want me to be the next senator of Kentucky, where we can have a constant effort to advocate for Kentucky farmers and the signature industry of the state, which is agriculture. So thank you all very much. I think we were going to do a roundtable, and we've kind of cut it short, but I do want to have anyone who has a burning question, or if there's a topic I didn't touch on there very briefly, or suggestion, to let me know right now, or as we continue to have these conversations.
So I don't have a question, but I've got a comment. I didn't drive 4 hours and 15 minutes just to listen and shake hands. I'm from Fleming County. Brian Furnish is from Harrison County. We came a long way to support Andy. I've known Andy since 2012 when he was running for the U.S. House race in the 6th District. And he's been an exemplary example of what it's like to have dialogue between those that represent you and those that are represented. So over the years, I can think of countless examples where you've reached out to myself or other folks within the district to ask questions about things. You can't know everything about every subject, and it's great to have folks that represent you that realize that and will call folks. So if it's something that I don't know about in agriculture, you say, hey, who's somebody that's doing, whose background in cattle, who's a great person to talk to? Talk to Scott Porter. Who's a person to talk to about this issue with him? Whatever it is, it's just been an open dialogue for 14 years now. We sincerely appreciate it. Not only that, the other reason I showed up today is that Congressman Babar shows up for whatever is going on throughout the 6th District. Obviously, with commencements in Washington, D.C., that's a difficult thing to do. But we've seen that for the last 14 years, that you've showed up for not just when there's a campaign or an election, but throughout the years. It's easy to run for office, whether it's state, local, or federal, and just show up when it's close to election time. But Congressman Barr has showed up consistently throughout the years. So I thank you for that. That's why I'm here today, is that I expect that you guys, we've been blessed in the 6th District to have that type of relationship, not just when I say us, not just myself, but the farm community have been blessed with that relationship. And I look forward to you having that opportunity to have a much greater impact and a much greater relationship across the state as a U.S. Senator.
Well, thanks to the Hinton family, four generations?
Yes, sir.
Four generations of Hintons serving Fleming County and beyond. And they are the pillars of their community, like all of you all are, and they are just great, fine people. They're always calling about the tractor parade in Flemingsburg. And we've had a great time representing your family and a real great source of knowledge for agriculture for Kentucky.
If I can add one more thing, the phone call that stands out to me the most over the years is the week that everything was getting ready to shut down because of COVID, is I see on my cell phone that Andy Barr is calling, and he wants to know how do you foresee this impact in agriculture? What do we need to be thinking about and looking at? Who do we need to be making calls to get more information? So that I'll never forget that, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for helping me navigate that. And when we were putting together the PPP loans, we actually did that in the Financial Services Committee. We designed that with the Treasury Department, and the Hinton family helped us actually think through some of the details on how to put that program together. And by the way, that program has its faults like any other government program. But the smartest thing we did when we designed the PPP program is we recognized, you know, the whole economy was being shut down. The government was shutting down the whole economy, which in hindsight was not a good idea. But what we realized was we could not depend on the federal government to save every business. What we had to do was we had to deputize the private sector to provide the emergency liquidity to the farm businesses of this country and all small businesses in this country. So what we did was, instead of just putting all this responsibility on the Small Business Administration or the Department of Treasury or the IRS, we basically said, okay, community bank after community bank after community bank or credit union or small lender, we said, you do it and we'll reimburse you based on the criteria of the program. And that was vitally important to provide that lifeline. I'll never forget, by the way, in like August or September of 2020, I had the CEO of the Kentucky Bankers Association call me and he said, Andy, do you know how many tax dollars have actually been spent on this PPP program? And I said, no, how many? And he said, zero, because we, the banks of this country, have not been reimbursed 1 cent yet for the hundreds of billions of dollars that we have provided these PPP loans. But they knew they were going to get reimbursed, and that's how we were able to get that money out in an emergency basis.
And I know our ethanol plant stepped up to the calls too, because they went from making the additive for E15 to turn it into hand sanitizer.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
I'd say on that line, we really appreciate your support. There's probably nothing that will help agriculture in this whole country better than having year-round E15. It's not just Kentucky, it'll help all corn producers, and that we're about 2 billion bushels of extra corn today we can't sell. That's why the price is cheap. We can burn that up, make ethanol out of it, would be huge. Appreciate your support.
Yes, sir. Message received. Mr. Hunt?
And I think, David, just the chairman of the board, I think you'll find the Commonwealth Agri Energy has members in 63 counties. That's 50% of Kentucky. And they have returned over $250 million cash back to the farmer in 20 years. They give the money back when the farmer deals with their company. They own one share of stock and get you a whole benefit, cost you $100. As for you, though, this program, it's kind of actually, it's three generations of hunts that have been room today. Two more is a farmer, I think. We should have them to the generation of farmers. I understand the hen family know part of you well. I don't get to see you much, but I know them, and they're going to do on the same board. We picked this guy out thinking this may be our pick for what we've got to do. Senator McConnell was the same way. I was a young guy, a Democrat. Senator McConnell, like his first time, stood up talking from this town right here. And I guess stood by him for a long time before ever changed. He reminded me once, when you're a Democrat, you can't even vote for in the primary. And I asked him, have you ever lost a race? He said, no. I said, who do you think picks who runs against you? Well, I did change. He won his election. He had to have farm support from the western part of the state to the central part of the state. We do too. This young man, my personal opinion, this is the same thing I tell him every time I see him. You got to shake some hands. You got to know. They got to know what you look like down here. It's a long ways. I can verify that 400 and some miles. I took the horse to Lexington back all in one day. It was 540 some miles. I made that trip. But I think this is the man we picked for. We got to try to get his name out here as much as we can. I think so. I see. You got to shake some hands. Ain't got to be no hour-long conversation, but what you look like and what you all about. That'll mean a lot of votes. Appreciate you, what you do. You're welcome here anytime.
Thank you.
I think we got through all that already. But whatever we can do, we'll be glad to do it. And I think you've got, what little I know, you've got the pick of the group. And this is a pick of Tennessee right here.
He can't vote for
it. This guy's name comes up more in agriculture in Tennessee. This is George. Yeah, but you're what now? You got a title.
State FSA chairman.
Oh, yeah. FSA chairman, Tennessee. Been with this company a long time. George is the other side of Nashville, great, but he can compare. We know what Tennessee, Kentucky look like. We have stores in six states. And we see agriculture about every stage you can. Still, Kentucky stands tall if we keep our people in the leadership place familiar with what goes on the farm. We have to do that. Because they're not going to know. Most complex business there is today. I've been in 50-something years, I guess. I don't know, Brandon. But that's my oldest grandson said here. And it's most complex industry today. It's not something you go back and do when you can't do anything else. That's what it used to be looked at. I'm sorry, more work today. But in this room, there are a lot of really, really good, strong people. I think introducing this young man and getting his name out there stuff is going to be pretty important. Appreciate what you do, what you think of. I understand you got them bank thing, but you got the agriculture. We use money.
You do. Yes, you do.
A lot.
Yes, you do. And Mr. Hunt gave me an education early on. He said, you got to understand, being from Lexington, West Kentucky is not Bowling Green. It's west of us.
West to West Kentucky.
Yes, and I work with Bill Haggerty and Marcia and I serve together in the House, and John Rose and I serve.
John's my congressman.
Well, John's a great guy, and John and great farmer, great agriculture advocate, and he and I serve together in the Financial Services Committee. So look forward to working with our friends from Tennessee too. Now that we beat Vanderbilt, I can say that. Those were two lopsided basketball games. good to see. I've had two wins over Tennessee. How about that? Sorry. All right. Anything else? Any other suggestion?
Whoa. Can't imagine how I'll write them off that easy.
Congressman, I'm in your district as well, 96-2012 as well. And thank you for all you've done for agriculture in our district. You've been our farms many times. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you for your support on the hemp and tobacco over the years. One of the issues I see, I know Farm Bureau addressed it with Sir McConnell, is the transition of assets from the older generation to the younger generation. And if we don't address that, we're going to keep losing farmland, because these young farmers can't afford to be buying these farms. And so we need to take that further down the path and find ways to get these young people started, because there's a lot of, my kids' generation want farm, but they can't. And if they don't inherit anything, it's going to be really hard for them to make it with the land prices and equipment prices and increases. And so you and G.T. Thomas were in Lexington a few years back at the stockyards and we talked about this. And so there's a pretty good plan out there. We just need to address it going forward.
I want all your suggestions, all your ideas on that. Definitely want to work on that issue and support 4-H and FFA and all those great programs, but ultimately it's access to capital. It really is a financial services issue because land is expensive, and the capital equipment required is expensive, and learning how to farm is expensive. And so we're looking for all the ways, whether it's through the tax code or through access to credit, certain kind of programs. And then there's the land use issue. This is what nobody wants to talk about, but the solar and the data centers and all that. Here's the thing about Kentucky. We've got pristine farmland, and we can't lose it. We got to protect it. Farmers are the best environmentalists around, as my good friend Ryan Quarles and Jonathan Schell like to say, right? And thank goodness we've got Waters of the United States fixed, and the EPA is far less of a, those bureaucrats there, they don't know anything about the environment like you all do. You all really don't. Ephemeral stream is not a navigable water. So, but what that means is to conserve this beautiful land, we've got to be smart about zoning. Now, you will hear me, and look, I'm for private property rights. If someone can't pass on their farm to a future generation, it's their land, they own it. If there's no zoning and some solar outfit comes in and offers them a windfall and big money, it is what it is. But we do need to think about, this is a non-federal issue, but zoning rules to protect our farmland. You will hear me talk a lot about data centers. And the reason why you will is because we are in a race against China for artificial intelligence. By the way, AI is coming to farming, precision farming. We need precision farming. We're so productive as it is, but you're going to be integrating AI into the tractors and everything else. AI is going to affect everything. We are in a race for AI dominance against the Chinese. So what does that mean? We actually do need data centers. The issue is where they go. They shouldn't be going on the best farmland in the world. They shouldn't be taking up our farm. So there's zoning issues that need to happen. But don't be alarmed when you hear me say we need more, not less, AI data centers, that we need the energy, the power to to go into those data centers. That's at the foundation of the AI stack is firm dispatchable power. And the tricky thing is that a lot of these power plants are on these rivers that supply the farmland. And so you've got, what I think is that the perfect place for these data centers is in Appalachia, in eastern Kentucky. They want the tax base there. We've got a ton of empty industrial sites over there. They're in proximity to the coal mines over there. There's not the NIMBY issues. There's not the farmland issues. And there's a lot of electrical infrastructure over there that exists. So I'd like to be really smart about these hyperscalers and talk to these hyperscalers about, hey, don't take our farmland, but go to where the power is and go to where they want the jobs and where they want the tax base. And if there is a place where it makes sense or where it's not going to take up our farmland, fine. But it should be a local decision, ultimately, about where these places go. Anything else?
And I'll bring up, E15 has already been mentioned, but everybody needs to know that there's no member of Kentucky's congressional delegation that fought harder, and Brandon was there to witness it, than this guy right here did for E15 a few weeks ago. And I want to thank you for that. Everybody, I know you don't want to brag about it, but he worked harder than 95% of the people in Washington trying to get that done. And everybody here needs to know that.
Well, I know we're all disappointed it didn't happen, but I can tell you the Speaker of the House knows where I stand.
I'm aware. I was very close to it.
we'll make another run at it. We got an ag supplemental, and we'll see what we can do. And just keep at it. Perseverance. By the way, there's no more harder working people on planet Earth than farmers. Farmers have work ethic. Kentucky farmers have work ethic. Not to sound super immodest, but maybe I could just have Brian and Adam tell you about this instead of me. But my dad, my mom, they taught me and my siblings about hard work and perseverance. You know, I can't promise results in every case. I may not get it done, like with E15, but what you're gonna get with me is work ethic, and you're gonna get someone who doesn't give up. And I'm a bit of a pest in Washington. And that's sometimes the squeaky wheel is what is required. And I have also found in my political career, and I was in the private sector before, but I have found in my political career, when I'm looking about who I'm gonna support as candidates to come join us in Congress, I look at who is a hardworking candidate, because the hardest working candidates end up being the best members of Congress, because they're hardworking members. There's something about work ethic, and you all know it better than anybody else, because it takes a lot of hard work to farm. You're gonna get someone who may not always be able to deliver because it's just Washington, D.C., but you're gonna get someone who's gonna give it his all and give it his best shot. And what I found is, just like anything else in the world, perseverance, never giving up, just keeping at it, ultimately you get it done.
I was actually thinking about that before you went that route. I was thinking about you. You asked me how we were in business for 108 years, and I told you basically two things: that every day you got to work and show up, and the other thing is build relationships. So where my mind went, in addition to the fact that you know, I used to think that leadership meant lots of different things. When you're 18 versus when you're 28 versus when you're 47, your definition changed a lot to me. And to me, one of the top line of leadership is showing up. So whether that's locally showing up for a visitation for someone that was connected to you, whether that's showing up for the school board meeting, or whether that's showing up in your district or committee meetings. Andy has a track record showing up in that relationship thing you talked about, Brian, and you mentioned G.T. Thompson coming to the district, the guy that's involved in, you know, the most important guy writing the farm bill that you brought around. So Andy's got 14 years of relationships in Washington, D.C., and one of the six districts across the state that the folks running against you don't have that, and I know they don't have your work ethic, so I'll speak.
Thank you. One of my favorite presidents, who's not a, he's not a, the he's an underappreciated president, I'll put it that way, is Calvin Coolidge. He was a Republican. And Calvin Coolidge famously said, nothing in this world can take the place of persistence. He said, education will, he said, genius will not, talent will not, education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. The slogan, press on, always have and always will solve the problems of the human race. So that's my slogan too, press on. It's like Thomas Edison, one of the greatest inventors and entrepreneurs in American history. I hope they teach you this in school. But Thomas Edison said, I've never failed. I've only learned 9,999 ways how to not build a light bulb. Now that's got to be the slogan of the farmer. The farmer has never failed. He's just learned over and over again how it doesn't work. And then it's perfection. I was talking to Mr. O'Brien in Davis County earlier this morning, and he told me that, I asked him, I said, from a litter from a sow to 300 pounds, how long does it take? 6 months. I said, are you kidding me? That is incredible. But that was trial and error. In order to do that over time, that took trial and error to learn how to be that productive, that efficient. And so farmers know this better than anybody else, but I want to take that kind of work ethic and that perseverance and apply it to representing you all in the Senate.
Andy, I was raised primarily in a Democrat home, like probably two-thirds in this room. My dad was a staunch Republican, Democrat. My mother was raised from a Republican family. We were Democrats for up to 20 years ago, but we always voted for the individual. But what makes me sick and tired, makes me want to puke, is I was watching Fox News last night, and but Rand Paul and Thomas Massie, what do they stand for? You know, I vote Republican 99% of the time, and what do we need them for? It's like the bull in the lot. Prove somebody you're a bull. You got to be for something. You know what I'm saying? We got a president that a great business person looks like to me. I don't agree with everything he does, but I don't think anybody would. But I find it so troubling that as a country we have somebody who is representing Kentucky and they won't support anything. I don't know that what they voted for, they just stand alone. And there's no, I never will forget what Natcher, I'm from Warren County, and Natcher said, you've got to compromise when you're in D.C. And we have two guys that cannot compromise on anything. And I just want you to go there. I'm going to support you. And I want you to be a staunch bull Republican.
Yes, sir.
You're doing your bull.
So I'll just say this. I'll just say this without talking about any colleagues or anything. What I will say is I think you owe it to your philosophy to win. Which means, and I'm a conservative, and I'm principled one. I was raised in the era of Ronald Reagan. So that means I believe in limited government, free enterprise, and a strong national defense. Amen. So I back the blue. I'm for our veterans. I'm the grandson of two World War II veterans. All those things. But I also represent the district that was once represented by Henry Clay. Henry Clay was known as the Great Compromiser. Yes. He's misunderstood. People criticize Henry Clay because, he compromises his principles. No. Being a statesman or being the great compromiser is not about compromising your core values. You should never compromise your core principles or your core values. What it's about, in my experience, and I have worked across the aisle. I am a member of a bipartisan working group. Not because I'm a rhino, not because I'm not conservative enough. No, because I want to be an effective conservative. I want to be an effective legislator, which means if sometimes, like with E15, we're not going to get some, we're not going to get every Republican. I know that. So if we're going to get E15 done, you got to listen. You got to listen to some Democrats where you can actually get them on your team and figure out how to build coalitions. And if you don't get 100%, but if you get 70%, it's called progress. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. That's my philosophy. That's how you get things done. I don't want to go there to make a point. I want to go there to get things done. All right. All right, guys. Well, thank you all very much. It's an honor to be with you all. Thanks to our law enforcement who are here. It's good to see you guys back there. Thanks for what you do. And what's next?
Well, members of the press, we have a podium set up outside the front door if you guys want to go there. Anyone who will join Andy when he makes his announcement to the media, we would love to have you all outside, but we have a few minutes to make some mingle before we go out there.
Be sure you sign the tab and prepare to get all your names on that.
Thank you very much.